good morning, everyone. Welcome. It's FBC Radio Live. It's Monday. It's June the 6th. And we are back here. Another fresh, fresh week after a little bit of a hiatus last week, missing a few episodes. But we are back, and we have Game 2 of the NBA Finals in the book, so we're going to get ready to talk about that. And yes, folks, if you are wondering, I am doing my best Wolf the Dentist Stanton impression with my sweet, slicked back hair right now. I just got out of the shower, so you're going to have to bear with me. John, do you know who Wolf the Dentist Stanton is?
No, I don't.
He was the bad guy from Mighty Ducks 2, the coach, the Iceland coach. Remember, he had the slick back hair and everything like that?
Oh,
yeah. And Hanzo asked if it was raining, and yeah. Okay.
Is that kind of based on Barry Melrose? I mean, because Barry
No. I think Barry Melrose is he had a mullet. Wolf, he had that very, like, you know, if you know, it was so slicked back, it barely looked like he had any hair at all. But, you know, that was just... That was the look. That was the intimidating coach of Iceland. You know, because of that movie, John, I will always remember the climates of both Iceland and Greenland and how they are quite the opposite of what they actually kind of say they are, you know, in their name.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's funny because, like, you know, they're obviously, you know, you learn a lot of things from school, but there's certain things, like just random facts, random like little things that I've learned from movies that have always stuck with me, and that's one of them. Like when everyone, if I was ever on Jeopardy, and they wanted to ask me about the climate of one of those, I would be like, yes, I know the answer to that question because I saw Mighty Ducks like 25 years ago, and I know it.
Maybe Aaron Rodgers would be hosting when you're on Jeopardy.
maybe. He said, you know. I didn't really watch much of the match. I watched the highlights and stuff like that, you know. Of course, our two guys won. Not surprisingly. I mean,
of course.
Not surprisingly. But what I found interesting was some of the discussion that was had after with the little round table among the four of them. And I thought that was fascinating because, you know, the reality of it is when you step back and actually look at it, I mean, the fandom aside, I mean, these guys generally get along fairly well. I think we both think that Aaron Rodgers and Brady are fairly close, just like Brady and mm-hmm. Peyton Manning, you know, have been close. So there's a lot of mutual respect. Certainly, it doesn't extend to the fan bases. Trust me.
No.
I know. Excuse me. But, you know, I thought it was fascinating that all three of those guys said Brady was better. You know what I mean? Like, sure. They were asked, okay, who's a better quarterback? Well, it's Tom Brady. Of course it is. And I think people are like, you know, and of course you're going to see the response on online. Well, of course they're humble. Of course they said that. Well, no, that they also said it because it's true. And mm-hmm. I'm before we get to this NBA Finals game, trust me, I'm not trying to avoid it here, folks. We will get to it. We've talked about this, and I'm going to ask you this, John. We've talked about this, you know, in the playoffs, obviously, and after the postseason and kind of during the season about, you know, our thoughts on Josh Allen and how he's progressed and everything like that. But I think it's fairly safe to say right now, John, that the Josh Allen hype has jumped the shark, sort of speak. and I mean, like, a long time ago, because it's getting way, 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 way over the top. I'm seeing lists, what was it, Odds Checker that US came out with their top five quarterbacks of the 22 season. Josh Allen, number one. What? I'm sorry. Like, I like the growth of Josh Allen. I like what Buffalo is doing. We've talked about it before. I think they're going to end up being the one seed this year by virtue of I think they're going to deserve it, but I also think that they're going to have a more advantageous path to that one seed versus what the AFC West is going to go through. Mm-hmm. In no way, forget about Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. I'm not even convinced that he's better than Patrick Mahomes. Now, I think there's certainly room for that to evolve over this year, and I think that's something we've talked about, John, you and I, because we've asked the question, where is he in terms of his growth? And it's like, okay, yeah, I mean, it's hard not to say, okay, he's elevated himself to a higher level, but the only reason you're saying he's the best quarterback in the league in 2022 before taking a single snap is projecting. I mean, all it is a hope and a prayer because it's based on absolutely nothing, John. And we're seeing it more and more where it's like, yo, Josh Allen is number one. Josh Allen is number one. And it's like, I'm not even focusing on the absurdity of ranking him over Tom Brady. Like, how do you, again, just let's focus on the two young quarterbacks. What does Josh Allen do better than Patrick Mahomes? Or what has he done better?
I think last impressions are so important when people get into these discussions. So the last time we saw
Josh Allen lost to Patrick Mahomes,
he was pretty spectacular in that.
Oh, sure he was. Sure he was. No one would disagree.
And it's not his fault that his coaching staff, you know, had a brain fart with 13 seconds left in regulation and did everything possibly wrong to help them lose that game. But I think that's what it is. And the physical skills are pretty amazing, right? We're talking about a guy 6'5".
Jamarcus Allen had great. I mean, I'm sorry, Jamarcus Russell had great physical skills.
Yeah, but, I mean, this kid's already produced. I mean, that's one end to the other. But I think what it is that it's always the next guy up. Like, already I think people are probably, well, Mahomes is getting kind of old now. He's been there for 4 or 5 years, and here's the new kid on the block, right? I think we can all agree that the four best quarterbacks in football were sitting at that round table, right? And let's take the two old guys out of the equation and discuss that. I would still take Patrick Mahomes. I mean, he's won a Super Bowl. He's won an MVP. He's gone to another Super Bowl. So those things are important. I think it's just that Buffalo looks like they're ready to win the Super Bowl. So with him being the quarterback, that he's going to get a lot of that attention.
Yeah, but, you know, at the same time, too, it's like, I understand that from a fan's perspective, but we're seeing this more and more so from the media. And again, it's turning the media into basically a fan roundtable. And that's not what it's supposed to be. Like, if you have a show that's called Fan Roundtable, well, yeah, okay, that's an appropriate discussion. But we're trying to talk about, like, legitimate topics here. And you have, you know, folks out there doing more to get clicks and reaction than to actually give good information. And like I said, when I've asked this to several people, there's not a single thing other than guessing or hoping that would elevate him over guys like Brady or Rodgers. There's certainly more of a discussion with Mahomes, but I think at this point, I think Mahomes has a pretty strong advantage in his favor, and it would have to, you know, there would have to be something that happened throughout this season that would elevate Josh Allen. And I think that's the appropriate way to do it. Not this, you know, oh, it's this new, the new flavor of the month. No, it's an unfortunate product of how sports are covered today, because so many people have access to Twitter or whatever and can just, you know, say whatever opinion comes across their mind, whether it's legitimate or not. So you're going to get a lot of those reactions, and subsequently, media outlets are, you know, buying into it. So, well, look, everyone's hyping up Josh Allen, so we're going to come out with our top five list. And you know, I even got to the fact that Tom Brady was number 5 on that list, by the way, John. Five.
Who was also in that list?
Herbert? No, Herbert, Rodgers, Mahomes, Allen, and then Brady was 5th. Allen was number 1. I think Mahomes was 2, and then, like, Rodgers, Herbert. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, there is no tangible anything that gives legitimacy to that opinion. That's not my opinion. That's just...
Well, it's a projection, right?
It is. It's a right now. Yeah, well, it would be great if they called it that, but they're calling it the best quarterbacks right now. So
the last time I saw all these guys play, I would still say that Rodgers and Brady are the two best quarterbacks. I mean,
easily.
And Rodgers didn't really play all that well in the postseason game, and Brady played a good, solid game and nearly pulled off yet another comeback. So, you know, I get all that. I mean, if that's the case, if we're just going to go by Super Bowls, then Matt Stafford should be number one, right?
Yeah,
he's the only guy out of the group that won his last game. I think keep the two old guys out only because it's just like it's tough to compare anybody to those guys. It's tough to compare anybody to Brady. I mean, if anybody has a problem with those three quarterbacks, then Brady.
Well, no, I mean, John, forget about historically, or I mean, just talk about now.
Still right there.
I mean, right now, in the last, just think about the last two seasons, back to back 40 touchdown passes. Obviously, last year led the league in many categories and was, and I don't want to revisit this conversation, not quite yet, but, you know, was just as efficient, if not more, than, you know, MVP Aaron Rodgers. So we can talk about, you know, who or what should have won the MVP, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. Regardless, he came in second in the MVP voting after winning a Super Bowl in 2022 with the first. So I ask this question all the time, and this is actually a question I've been asking for years because we've been dealing with this for years. What has Tom Brady done to lose the title of best quarterback in the league? And I will ask that to anyone who dares to say that he is not the best one in the league, because I know what the answer is going to be, and it's a non-answer. They don't have an answer, because there's no physical trait that's been apparent that's fallen off on his behalf. Now, again, we can get into the season, and that could change. I can't predict the future, John. If I could predict the future, I'd be in on a tropical island sipping Mai Tais because I've won
you
the lottery 16.
Me,
John, I imagine we would have an Andy Dufresne red type of relationship where like I'd be fixing a boat and I'd eventually get your old rear end down and you'd help me on the water. So
I don't even know how to swim, Ian. I'm useless.
Oh, that's really fine. I got life vests. It's fine. You're good.
Okay. All right. I thought it'd be like Titanic for me.
Yeah,
he's still playing it in a ridiculous.
Well, and that's the point. Like, and I try to impress that upon people. Like, it's not necessarily like Josh Allen. Like, no one's saying that Josh Allen isn't a rising, ascending quarterback. I think based on what we've seen the last couple of years, it would be hard to say otherwise. But what we're saying is, like, just because he's had a nice little stretch here, like, that doesn't elevate him to, like, you don't, like, this best quarterback in the league title isn't as fluid as people think. Like you said.
Right.
Like, it's not Matt Stafford because he won the Super Bowl. Like, I think everyone believes Matt Stafford's a really good quarterback, and he had a really nice season and a pretty good playoff run. He's not the best quarterback in the league.
No.
And, no. You know, if you want to get in, okay, well, you know, I go back to that 2019 MVP, Lamar Jackson, No, 50 votes. No one else voted for anyone else. No one coming out of that season was making an argument that he was the best quarterback in the league.
Sure.
Doesn't mean he didn't 100% deserve that MVP, because he did. It just means he had a really great season. But he wasn't better than Patrick Mahomes. He's not better than Tom Brady. And I think clearly, you know, I don't think anyone's even discussing him among the top five in the league right now. So, to me, it's certainly not fluid. And like I said, when you have a guy like Brady who's, you know, forget about the historical part of it. Just talk about the most recent history. And for the last 4 years, two Super Bowl wins, an MVP. Well, I'm sorry, 1 year removed from an MVP, and then, you know, go down the list of accolades. Uh-huh. If you want to add more than just the last 4 years, well, guess what? His resume is going to get even better and better and better. And it often includes beating his contemporaries in this discussion. Josh Allen and Tom Brady said it best. He beats Josh Allen all the time. Josh Allen doesn't beat a Tom Brady-led team. He has yet to do so.
Right. Even last year, right?
Yeah, even last Brady year. And Brady, guess what? You know, toe-to-toe with this great quarterback, Josh Allen, guess who came out on top? The old man, again. He's beaten Patrick Mahomes twice on the largest scale. I mean, you rarely get to do that once to a player. He's done that twice in 4 seasons. AFC Championship game, Super Bowl. The two highest possible instances where they could have met that season, Tom Brady outperformed Patrick Mahomes, very much so in the second game, of course. You know, in the Super Bowl, of course. And then
Aaron Rodgers in the NFC Championship game. I'm not pushing back at all. No, I think that, you know, to anoint Josh Allen the best quarterback in football is foolish at this point. We'll see what happens this year. I think the thing I like about Josh Allen is the same thing with Patrick Mahomes. I think they're both very competitive guys.
Oh, sure.
I think they're committed guys. So I think they're made of the right stock. So they probably sat on that panel, and they probably just drooled looking at Tom Brady, like we all do. And I drool at, you know, the sight of Aaron Rodgers, of course. But I think they just looked at those two dudes and said, well, these guys at this advanced age are still ridiculously great. And, you know, they kind of respect that. And you see that in the NBA a lot. You know, you'll see a younger player kind of, you know, look to an older player and say, geez, if I can have the career that guy had, that's pretty good. And I don't see anybody having quite the career Tom Brady's had. I just don't think anybody can replicate that. It's just, it's a once-in-a-lifetime type athlete. So, yeah, I mean, but I, again, a lot of projections and all of that stuff. And I just don't see, I didn't see anything last year that made me think Brady's all of a sudden going to become some sort of mediocre quarterback. He still looks damn good to me, just as good as ever.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tradition as old as Festivus, John. Every year,
ooh,
every year, there's this anticipation of a Brady fall off. And that's where a lot of this comes from. Oh, of course. I mean, he has to fall off. No, he hasn't. He hasn't. And at this point, I'm not willing to just assume that's going to happen. Like, if it happens, it happens. Like, do I think he's going to all of a sudden lose his physical? Probably not. Like, if he's going to take a step back, I think it's going to be far more minor, but enough to, you know, again, change the impact that he has. I mean, okay, if that's the case, that's the case. He's 45 years old. That's fine. But to just assume that's going to happen based on literally nothing. I mean, there's not even the slightest, like, if anything, John, like, he's gotten more mobile and agile in his older age, which again, that's something that should be studied alongside some of these other scientific marvels that we've seen over our time, is how can a guy at that physically demanding of a position somehow get more agile and quick inside the pocket? So to me, there's no, like, if you're going to make a claim, and I understand bold predictions, John, sometimes aren't rooted in fact. They're more just gut feeling and whatever. And I understand that. I accept that, especially when they're framed that way. But when they're framed as this is what it is, i.e. these are the five best quarterbacks in the league and you cannot tell me otherwise, and you have Josh Allen number one, well, guess what? There is literally zero tangible supporting evidence for that notion. So that's when it becomes just kind of a silly, like, okay, I'm not really taking you seriously. Yeah, had you say, okay, this is what the five best quarterbacks are going to look like after the season, well, yes, then there's that, okay, we're making some assumptions. We're making some projections here, but you're portraying it as right now. And right now, there's nothing. And again, this isn't my opinion, John. This is just a matter of fact. There is nothing to suggest that Josh Allen has somehow surpassed a guy like Tom Brady. And, you know, that's where we're at right now.
Yep.
So
only you could bring up Tom Brady and only I could bring up Aaron Rodgers after game two of the NBA.
I know. Well, you know, I was trying. I was trying. I was trying to put that discussion off for as long as humanly possible, because last night was certainly not that feel-good game that we had in game one. Although I will say I did not bet on game two. I did bet on game one. So, you know, I'm not, you know, I did win some money game one. That's fine. You know, hey, like I said, I expected the Celtics to come out pretty well in game one. And look, the reality of this is, and I don't know, I know I saw some people were panicking, and I was actually, you know, despite what I said just now, I was actually relatively okay. Not okay, but you know what I mean? Like, I looked at it as they got a split in Golden State. And I think if you lose sight of that, then I think you can start to panic. But, John, this entire postseason run has been this upside-down roller coaster ride. What made us think that this series was going to be anything different? Like, I mean,
nothing. No.
Yeah, like, we've seen, like, I'm sitting there watching this team go down by 12, and I'm like, eh. I mean, it happens every game. Did I expect a comeback? I did. I thought, you know, again, obviously they fell just a little bit short, and then the wheels kind of fell off there at the end. But fortunately for the Celtics, the fact that they were down by so much doesn't mean that they lose two games. They still only lose one. And as we brought up before, you know, this Golden State team lost, or was down by 55 at one point in a game in this playoff run. Like, what we saw on last night. Now, I think there's certainly legitimate, there's a legitimate gripe with officiating, because again, I you know, I think we both came out of game one thinking, on both sides, it was fairly even. And if anything, there was no glaring missed call or bad call or whatever. It felt like it was just a well-officiated across-the-board game. Now, and I'll say this before I start talking about the officiating. The Celtics didn't, regardless of the officiating, the Celtics did absolutely nothing to deserve to win that game last night. They had opportunities despite despite some poor officiating calls in the especially in the second quarter. That again, when Jaylen Brown gets called for a foul in which he doesn't even come close to touching the player. I mean that's just bad. I mean I don't care. Mm-hmm. Like it, yeah, I understand the game moves quickly, all that stuff. That's bad. That's terrible stuff. And on top of that, John, a technical is a technical. Now, we can argue whether or not that second call should have been a technical. I'm fairly certain that if a player, you know, pulls down the shorts of another player, that's going to get called a technical. Correct? Correct? I mean, that seems like a
Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm assuming that's a pretty easy tech call. You had your NBA analysis, ABC NBA referee analysis, Steve Javy, former NBA official, by the way, 23 NBA final games, get on camera yesterday and basically confirm kind of what we've all believed to be true, and that is, well, certain stars in certain situations gets preferential treatment. And in this case, sure, they tried to justify not calling it technical because, well, Draymond already had one and they don't want to upset the competitive balance of the game. Well, I don't care about that. If it's a technical, it's a technical. And worrying about upsetting the competitive balance, well, that's on the player, John. That's on Draymond. And you heard him after the game, right? Where he basically said, like, I know I get special treatment. I know what I can do and get away with. That's a problem.
Right.
That's a problem.
Yeah, and I wonder how that's going to impact Game 3, because now the officials may look at that and say, well, hold on one second. We have to kind of push back against that and show who's boss. And Lord knows who's going to officiate on Wednesday night. I would assume Scott Foster's ready to come in and muck things up. Look, last night you had Zach Zarba, who is the head hockey league of NBA officials. He just loves himself. I mean, he wants to be on camera. It's just, this is what he does. That second foul against Jaylen Brown was a phantom call, and it took Jaylen Brown out of the game. Now, Jaylen Brown has to be better than that.
You have
to learn to play with two fouls. You can't go 4-for-6 at the beginning of the game and look like you're ready to, like, you know, assume the front runner status as MVP of this series, because he was 4-for-6 and unstoppable early in the game. After that second foul, 1-for-11 from the floor. You got to be better than that. You got to fight through that. I think Draymond Green got into his head, got into Jason Tatum's head. That's exactly what Draymond Green does. He's Brad Marchand and, you know, Rodney Harrison kind of rolled into one. You know, he's an irritant.
But you know, part of that though is
he's also a very good player too.
Well, look, I'd be fine with him shooting all day long.
As long as he doesn't shoot, right?
Well,
he's the one guy that can impact the game taking three shots.
Part of the problem is, and it's like, you know, I definitely respect the that style of play in terms of like the players that you mentioned that kind of get under your skin. The problem is he's afforded extra leeway, and that's the problem. Like, look, you got Grant Williams out there who's going to run his mouth just as much as Draymond Green, and I love that, and that's fine. And I like, you know, there's an aspect of that, like, you want to get into the heads, but he takes it to another level because he knows he can get away with it. Like, mm-hmm. How many times are you going to get into the face of the official after already having a technical and not get teed up? Like, I think that's what Ime Udoka was kind of trying to prove, like, what does it take for me to get teed up? And he just ran his mouth until he purposely got teed up at that point. Because, I think what he did, and I think this is going to go a long way, even when the Celtics were kind of starting to, he sat those starters down. Like, I think that, honestly, I thought that was a great coaching move on his behalf, because it was done so early, and it was like, you know what, you guys do not deserve to be on the floor right now. And they didn't.
Right.
They didn't. I mean, it was frustrating because you look at that game, and despite, like I said, I don't want to make it seem like we're blaming officiating, because that is 100% not the case. It's a factor, but it's not 100% not the case, because despite that, John, this game was a 2-point game at halftime. They had every opportunity in the world to make plays, but, you know, what happens, and regularly that happens, that causes the Celtics team to lose, they turn the ball over. And they were just turning the ball over at just an unimaginable rate. Like, it just seemed like every single time anything went their way, they would just turn the ball over in a very sloppy manner, too. So, look, I'm not, you know, I'm not overly concerned. Again, like I said when we started this conversation, this is what this postseason run has been for the Celtics. It has been a roller coaster ride. There has not been this, like, whenever you think you can predict what's going to happen next, you can't. With that said, I feel pretty darn good about going into game three. I'm not going to lie. Like, you know, you go back home, you kind of get the sense kicked out of you, you know, kicked into you, hopefully. And I think the message being, like, you know, you just can't play the way you did. Like, I still mm-hmm. think, like, I mean, look, Steph Curry was not going until late. You take control of that game when you had opportunities early on. Steph Curry never gets going. And if he does, it's too little too late because you're in control of that game. And that's the opportunity that was missed by the Celtics last night.
Yeah, the Celtics were shooting the ball really well early. Jaylen Brown was on fire. Jason Tatum was on fire. But again, you make a great point, Ian, the turnovers, the complete difference. And you look at that game, 19 turnovers, that's a very high number. The problem is 15 of those are live ball turnovers. There's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Not all turnovers are the same. I mean, not all interceptions are the same, right? If you throw a Hail Mary at the end of the first half and it's picked off in the end zone,
right.
Big deal. It's a Hail Mary. It doesn't really impact the game. Same thing in basketball. Live ball turnovers turn into points. So Golden State was able to turn 19 turnovers, 15 of them live ball turnovers, into 33 points. That doesn't even seem to make sense. Like, it doesn't even mathematically work. But then again, you factor in Golden State's ability to hit threes off of turnovers. That's what happens. And you get them into their offensive flow. That's the common denominator. The X factor for the Celtics throughout this postseason is turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
13 or fewer turnovers, they win. More than 13 turnovers, they lose. It's that simple. I mean, take care of the basketball better and kind of play through that, and you'll be in better shape. There's no reason the Celtics didn't have an 8-10-point lead at the half if they had not turned the ball over so much. And at that point, now the pressure is really on Golden State. I think when you got to halftime and it's a 2-point game, Golden State's like, well, we own the third quarter as always, which they always have. In this 8-year run, for some reason, they are the best third quarter team in the league. By far, it's like a blowout in the third quarter. We've seen that already. You realize in the first two games of the series, Ian, Golden State outscored the Celtics 73-38 in the third quarters. Like,
yeah.
That's not – I don't know what it is. Is Steve Kerr a magician at halftime? Or is – I also just think it's a point where, you know, the veterans get a little rest, and also Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green have played so many games together that they know how to make adjustments on the fly. So I think that might have something to do with it as well. But, yeah, take care of the basketball. You'll be fine.
Yeah, and look, I mean, and that's the crazy thing about all this. As bad as it looked at times yesterday, and as bad as, you know, you think it could get for the Celtics, it's their biggest enemy is themselves. And look, give credit where credit's due. Golden State really started to play some really, really good defense later. But to your point, I mean, a lot of these turnovers were just sloppy plays on behalf of the Celtics that, you know, put them in a position to be well defended or ultimately turn the ball over. Like, there was a couple times where Marcus Smart made a pass where I'm like, what are you doing? Like, why? Why are you even trying to do that? Like,
right.
I don't know what the goal was. I don't know what – it was such a low percentage play to begin with that you sit there and scratch your head and you're like, why are you being so careless with the basketball? Because based on what we've seen, if they take care of the basketball, they are very clearly the better team. I don't think you're going to get half court shots from Jordan Poole. I don't think you're going to have this, you know, across the board score. Like, look, the Celtics are the deeper team. They generally get, you know, more balanced scoring across the board, and they just didn't get that yesterday, unfortunately. And, you know, you add in the turnovers and, you know, all the other mitigating factors, and there you go. You have a pretty bad loss in game two. But like I said to start this discussion, at the end of the day, John, this is split coming out of Golden State. So as far as I'm concerned, the Celtics have just come out ahead on this because
it's not the Tour de France, right?
Like,
Golden State's not coming here Wednesday with a 19-point lead. It's 1-1.
It's even.
It's kind of a little bit different than the Miami series where the Celtics dominated and it was 1-1. And you can make a case that Golden State outplayed the Celtics over the entirety of these first two games, other than, of course, the fourth quarter in game one, and it's 1-1. That's how basketball works.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly, each team has had a quarter in which they've outscored the opponents by more than 20 points.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Celtics didn't get that last night.
Right. 35-14. I mean, that's nuts, right? It's just like, are the Celtics ever going to score here? You also had three starters, Marcus Smart, Al Horford, and Rob Williams, each with 2 points.
Yeah.
Marcus Smart had twice as many turnovers as points, and he's your point guard. He has to step up.
Yeah.
Because I just think that when he's playing well, it just has some effect on the rest of the team, especially especially on the defensive end. So he's going to have to be the guy. He's going to have to be their Draymond Green on Wednesday, come in and be an irritant, do what he does. And that's the, I think the crowd will feed off of that, his teammates will feed off of that.
Yeah, and look, I mean, like I said, I mean, obviously it's not the ideal situation after last night, but you still like where this team is moving forward because, again, you can't imagine, like, there's going to be that little scoring from your, you know, your starters in general or guys like Marcus Smart. And, you know, I think maybe we saw the worst of their turnover problems yesterday because that was really, really bad at times. Just a slightly better control of the basketball early on, and the Celtics probably win that game. Because I don't think it gets as out of hand in the third quarter if they're not... You know what I mean? Like, if they weathered that storm a little bit in the second quarter and still came out in the second half with a lead, I don't think it turns into what we saw there. Because, to your point, I think certain players just kind of started to lack that confidence. Jaylen Brown especially, where, you know, he was getting in early foul trouble. And then just couldn't hit much going forward. And that can certainly be an issue, and that certainly trickles down to the rest of the team, where, like, at one point Jason Tatum looked like he was going to put up 45, and then, you know, it kind of snowballed from there. So game three is on Wednesday, so unlike what the Celtics had to deal with during the last two series, they're getting plenty of rest in between these games. So I do like the Celtics in game three. I think being on home court, despite, you know, sometimes them struggling at home, I think people just, again, got to take a step back and remember that this team has been who they have been since January. And that is a significantly large sample size. So for them to go out and lose last night, it's obviously unfortunate, but it's hard not to stay confident in what this team can do moving forward, even based on, you know, what we saw from Golden State. Because, look, I think we can all accept that Steph Curry is going to get his, whether it's in chunks or throughout the entire game. He's gonna put up 28, 32 points, something like that, maybe even more. If that's what Golden State's offense is, which is what it looks like, because, let's face it, as bad as the Celtics played last night, the Golden State offense wasn't great. Like, I mean, the number of extra opportunities that they got, you would think that game would have been a far bigger blowout, correct? And I know, look, I mean, obviously
it was up to 29, and it, you know, the garbage time cut it to 19, and it's just
total points, though, like, you know what I mean, like, not necessarily point margin, but total points from Golden State. Like, that's a game, like, when you're as good as they are in the third quarter, that's a game that they put up 125, 130 points in the past.
Yeah.
They didn't do that. They put the reserves in. But even then, like, even if it was the rest out there, I mean, you're not getting that complimentary scoring outside of Steph Curry. I mean, Klay Thompson looks like a shell of himself. I know the announcers, the broadcast crew was really trying to overhype what he was, but, like, he looks like a guy who's come off two major knee surgeries and is not 25 years old anymore. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, you're not getting that type of play from Thompson. You're not getting the offense from Draymond Green. And at times, you know, he could obviously add a little bit of a liability when it comes to, you know, if he's going to get called for technicals or not. But even so, like, I mean, Jordan Poole, okay, great. He hit a few really big shots, including basically one from half court. Okay, awesome. If that's what it's going to take to beat the Celtics, then so be it. But I like moving forward the big picture. I like the Celtics scoring across the board more than I like the Warriors. And I think ultimately the Celtics have a better defense. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're both, you know, as good as you can get in both categories. So
it just feels like a seven-game series because the Celtics can't seem to enjoy their success. Like, they win a game and then they come back the next game and it's flat. They've been doing this for the last two series, you know, where it looks like they're in control against Milwaukee and then they're not. Then
but what's the common denominator, John? Eventually they get it all together and get it done. So
they do, yeah.
They haven't lost
back-to-back games in the postseason. If they keep that up, they'll win the championship. They'll win games 1, 3, 5, and 7.
Yep. Hey, that's
that's
fine.
They're going to have to win another game in San Francisco, though, because Golden State's on 29 straight series with at least one road playoff win. So, yep. I mean, they're quite capable of coming here and The Celtics are only 5-4 at the Garden in the playoffs so far this year. So chances are it's going to be 2-2 going back to San Francisco for game five, and then you go from there, because it's just neither team's great enough to be dominant, but they're both good enough to stay competitive.
Yeah.
You know, that's, and this is what you get. This is what you get in that type of series where, you know, Al Horford, who loved the death, but he was no factor last night after being incredible in game one. Marcus Smart, really good in game one, no factor last night. In fact, he was a factor. He was bad. He was a negative factor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you got to get those guys to be buttoned up a little bit. And, again, take care of the basketball. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing.
That's the main thing. Just take care of the basketball. If Al Horford's going to hit 2 points, that's fine. They can weather that storm as long as they're not turning the ball over. If Marcus Smart's going to have a less than stellar offensive game and maybe a negative on that end, you can weather that storm, assuming the rest of the team's not turning the ball over like they were last night. And that's the problem. So we will be back on Wednesday to give our maybe we will have more confidence on Wednesday when we talk about this game and preview it a bit. But we will also talk about whatever else happens between now and then. So, John, thank you very much for tuning in or joining me every single day that we do this. And, of course, everyone out there for tuning in and listening to us complain about quarterbacks and talk about Celtics and Golden State, because that's generally what we do each and every day. So thank you, everyone. We will talk to you on Wednesday.